You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hey, not just Charlie Dobbin, but I've got a special guest. This is just the month of special guests. Welcome, Sean James, one more time to AM 740's Garden Show.
Always a pleasure.
Hey, nice to see you.
Nice
and your smiling face. Yes, I almost texted you this morning, do not do laundry this morning. Because last time, maybe not last time, one of the times you were here, you were doing laundry before the show and managed to do some little tumble down the stairs.
It was very spectacular. So is this morning, though. I somehow ended up, I slipped getting out of my car, and I'm holding onto the door, and I'm leaning on the inner door frame, and I couldn't move. I couldn't get up. I couldn't get down.
You were
I'm on like a 30-degree angle to the ground, and I'm stuck there.
Yeah. That wasn't pretty. It's a good thing I rescued you.
You did, yes. And the coffee.
And that's a problem. Your hands were full.
I could have just dropped the coffee.
Phone in one hand, coffee in the other. Couldn't do anything. All right. We've got all kinds of great things. But you know what? Your job, because you are the fill-in Frank, better do the phone numbers first because we love to hear from everybody. And then I've got a few announcements.
Awesome. Well, if we're local, it's 416-360-0740. And if it's long distance, then it's 866-740-4740.
You got those fours and sevens figured out. We're laughing about our friend Paul DeGroote. So Paul was here last week, as you know. And, you know, I've decided you guys are like each other's presidents of each other's fan clubs because you both are always promoting each other, which is very sweet. I like that.
You've got a great voice for radio, too.
That's good. So do you. Mm. The other thing I was going to say, that's one of the cool things about gardeners or horticulture, gardeners as a general term, is though we compete, we don't really compete. We share all the time and collaborate all the time.
I think of us more as colleagues.
Yeah.
There's so many people who are good at what they do that I don't think there's ever any competition between us, mm-hmm. Other than friendly competition.
Right.
I'm going to be on stage next week with Charlie Nardozzi doing the... Container Wars.
Oh, really?
Which is really exciting.
Oh, I've done that before, too.
I have not, actually. So
I did that at TBG.
I don't get nervous often, but I'm a little bit nervous.
You got a plan, or are you just going to wing it?
Hello from column A. I think that's wing it, isn't it?
Yeah. So do you have to provide the plants? Or
no. They provide – that's part of the trick of things.
Surprise.
Is they provide all the plants. They provide the planters. It's all – it's a big deal.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There's they have it all day long, every day. There's the – I don't know about that, but they're doing
celebrity
these –
celebrity –
yeah, container
pot-offs.
So they – yeah. I don't think you can call them that in the States.
Probably not. So where are you doing that?
I'm in Seattle at the Northwest Flower and Garden Show, which I'm really excited about. My first time speaking in the U.S.
Right.
So it's the second largest garden show in North America, so I'm pretty jazzed about it.
Second only to Philadelphia?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that's next on my hit list.
And getting paid in American dollars is nice, too.
Paid a little bit. They're such famous shows that they don't actually desperately need people. People want to speak there more than they want to pay them.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, Bloom's always relied on that, too, right?
Yeah, but they're going to cover the travel, which is nice, so I get to go see Seattle as well.
So you're there for a couple of days?
Yeah, it's a whirlwind tour. I teach for a couple of days.
Here,
I fly out that night.
I teach at Mohawk,
yeah. I teach the horticultural apprenticeship there. Fly out that night. Speak on the Friday, speak on the Saturday twice, fly back on the Monday, speak for Landscape Ontario on the Monday, and then teach Tuesday, Wednesday again.
Wow. So, no sleep for you.
Nuh-uh.
No laundry for you. So listen, Sean is a master of many things. I've had all these specialty guests on, Terry Kennedy, our orchid person, and of course, Paul being the tree lover that he is. Sean is, I always think of you kind of as a naturalist. You've got a really big knowledge about all creatures.
I grew up surrounded by nature. I grew up over by Crawford Lake in Campbellville, and it's tough to not gravitate toward it when you get to live with it so close.
Yeah, yeah, and it's out your window and back door every single day. So you're out there. Same thing. I grew up on a ravine in North York, and yeah, that was it. Salamanders, frogs, rocks. What's under this? What's under that? Yes. Pick it up. Look, right?
It's nature. It's fascinating. And then now the new trend is to bring it into the garden, which is great.
Yeah.
So it's not that I'm brilliant. It's that I ended up in the right place at the right time with the right skill set.
Yeah, that's right. And it is it's trending for sure.
So it's amazing.
Great. Yeah. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that. I think what we should do is go for a little quick break. But I want to remind people the lines are open. Got a call. Give us a call right now, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And here we are, Sean's giggling in the background.
As usual.
So Sean James is here. People, this is an opportunity to pick the brains of two of the smartest horticulturalists you'll ever have the opportunity to do so for free. How's that? Throw that in. Remember the numbers, 416-360-0740 or toll free 1-866-740-4740. So, Sean, as a lover of all creatures, big and small, do you ever participate in the Great Backyard Bird Count?
I didn't want to be a birder. Birders are weird. It just sort of happened. I ended up being a birder, and I love it.
I've never wanted to be a birder either, but I love birds.
I do, too. Well, everyone secretly does, because they make us feel safe. If the birds are fluttering around, we know there's no predators there, subconsciously.
True.
So it makes us relax. Mm. I have not participated in the count, because usually I'm just coming down off the season's, you know,
craziness.
Yeah. And so, no, I haven't done it yet, but I do work very hard to encourage birds in my garden and the gardens of my friends and customers.
And how do you find your bird population this year?
Well, in 2018, it was phenomenal.
Yes.
I had indigo buntings and brown thrashers. And yeah, really cool birds. Evening grosbeaks. This year, nothing special yet, although there is supposed to be.
Even seeing the population is down. Like, I'm seeing chickadees, the odd one, but I'm not getting the swarms or flocks of birds. Mind you, starlings kind of devastated my feeders last year a couple times. But this year, it's been quiet.
This year, I'm getting overwhelmed by English sparrows, which are not native and therefore not my favorite. Mm-hmm. But they're very aggressive, so they keep the other birds away.
Right.
And there is a gizmo that I'm going to look up and maybe get that apparently it's just this ring that other birds love, but for some reason the English sparrows don't like it. Yeah.
Well, for anybody who would like to participate in the Great Backyard Bird Count, it is on right now. It started yesterday and it goes right through until the 18th, which is Monday. It's a 4-day event. And all it is, what's so great about it is you don't even have to step outside the door. You look at your watch and it's a 10-minute count. So all you do is you sit at the window and look at the species of birds and the number, the quantity of birds that you see in that 10-minute period.
Neat.
Or you can step outside and do the same thing. Go for a walk, you know, down the green belt, or do it multi times in a day.
Mm-hmm.
All the data is sent in online, so you have to register and set up a little bit of an account. But it's so cool. I mean, statistics. If you bring it up, GBBC, so Great Backyard Bird Count, and then .birdcount.org. This is all put together with Cornell University and the Audubon Society. And Canada's right into it. The entire world is into it. So the map, see the map on your monitor? See the little yellow blips?
That's
those
incredible.
Are people that are reporting right now.
Right now, that's neat.
Right now.
Well, and I'm such a huge fan of citizen science.
Exactly,
and how
and that's what
we
this
can
is.
Harvest all of this information together and learn real things, like where the monarchs are going and things like that.
And speaking of which, did you hear the monarch population?
Up 144%. If there's a good news story,
that's
gardeners make enormous differences. This is my message for the year, is how we can fix all the problems in all the world.
Yeah, we can.
You're talking about carbon sequestration? That's us. Food security? That's us.
Yep.
Beauty? Hey.
That's us.
You know?
And diversity? That's us. So, I mentioned this to my students yesterday that the monarch population had sprung back phenomenally this year.
Yep.
I mean, this is just 1 year, yep. but still. And so they looked at me and said, so why do you think that is? And I was, well, the information I have is that it's got a lot to do with some changes made in America.
Mm-hmm.
So that those monarchs that are flying up and down that corridor between Canada and Mexico are now finding milkweed, are now finding
That's right,
sheltering
they've got a food
spots.
Source. And so, then we've expanded that to other creatures as well. Mm-hmm. We're helping all sorts of things live in our gardens by planting the right plants.
Yeah.
Save the bees, that sort of jazz.
Right. It's pollinator-friendly gardens, et cetera.
It's incredible.
And so the monarchs have really responded to mm-hmm. that because, you know, you got to remember the monarchs, it's three generations just to get to Mexico. Yeah. So they have to have food. They
get
have
back
to have,
from Mexico. Four generations, round trip.
Round trip.
One back,
down.
Three to get here.
Oh, wait.
They've also found a second colony in South Carolina.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's new.
What trees, I wonder?
I gave you everything I had.
Okay. So I also learned that in Mexico where the trees are, they're
yes.
somewhere that they all congregate, and they count them by counting like individual trees, basically, and then multiply by the hectares that are covered in monarchs. Mexico's been smarter, too. They've stopped logging out those trees,
yes.
and they're now...
Because we're paying for it, though,
mm-hmm.
that, which is good. Like, that's where a lot of my donations go, mm-hmm. is to plant trees mm-hmm. in Mexico, in that small little set of mountains,
mm-hmm.
and also to protect the land that's there. And we're making it more of an ecotourism
thing. I was going to say, they've
so
begun...
we're showing them yeah. the value of not cutting down the trees.
That's right, and ecotourism is taking off
yep.
around
Just
that...
Just like Costa Rica.
Yeah.
You know, you want us to save it? Fine, we'll save it. You're going to pay, which is great.
Yeah,
I'm a
nothing
fan.
Wrong with that. Yeah.
yeah.
I agree. Unfortunately, we can't chitter-chatter any longer, but we will be right back because we wanted to speak with Christine, who's giving us a call from Buffalo, New York.
Awesome.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And we're back. I'm with Sean James today. Thanks for coming in, Sean.
Thanks for having. Thanks for being here when I got here.
Not to mention, saved you from your car. All right, let's speak with Christine. She's giving us a call from Buffalo. Good morning.
Good morning, Charlie. We have a little problem.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter received a bunch of gardenias for Christmas.
A bunch?
They were so healthy that we tried to propagate them.
Oh.
We've got five plants growing.
Oh.
And one of the plants has like a Q-tip of cotton right in the middle at the Y.
Mm. Mealybug.
When you say you've got them growing, did you actually get them to root?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Well done.
Well done, yeah. So that's called mealybug. M-E-A-L-Y bug.
Will it go to the others? Do I have to isolate
yep.
it?
Definitely yep. isolate it.
Definitely.
I've gone the Q-tip and alcohol route. And people really seem afraid of that. And I have never... I got a... ironically, from the Master Gardeners, I got a bay plant,
oh, yeah.
which I've always
yeah.
wanted.
Like a bay laurel, yeah.
Yeah, and it had... like the cooking bay.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a scale on it, which is very closely related to mealybug. And I just used alcohol and a Q-tip, and I wasn't careful.
No,
but
well,
I did isolate it for a while.
Yeah, so isolate, like inspect all the plants.
Okay.
Look for any evidence of eggs and or adults.
And honeydew. That sticky, shiny stuff, that's often the giveaway.
Right, because the mealybug has piercing mouth parts, and it is taking juice out of the plant
mm-hmm.
through its mouth. And, of course, it when it moves a tiny bit, it leaves a hole behind, and then liquid spills out of the holes left
behind.
Also,
it doesn't use as much sugar as it takes. It's not after the sugar.
Mm.
So when it excretes the sugar, when it excretes,
yeah.
period, it excretes a lot of sugar.
Yeah, and
which
that's
is why
the honeydew,
bees and wasps come. And if it were outside, then it might get mildew.
I know.
Help me. Help me, Obi-Wan.
Black.
Sooty mold.
Sooty mold, okay.
But don't worry, that won't happen inside unless you've got super
sure.
high humidity.
Sure.
So main thing is inspect, isolate any with any evidence of insects. Of course, you are in the United States, so you have access to chemicals that we don't have. But I don't, gardenias will not
do that
like
anyway,
to be sprayed.
Especially not inside.
Yeah, I would not
gardenias
spray.
Gardenias don't like anything.
Yeah, if you don't have to, don't use any chemicals. As Sean said, a Q-tip dipped into rubbing alcohol, and then with that wet Q-tip, you actually touch the mealybug
okay.
and get it on its little body, and the rubbing alcohol will kill that individual insect. But your job is to do that on every little insect you see.
So not scotch, then?
Okay,
no,
so
just
I
rubbing
have
alcohol.
To go okay. over every leaf and twig.
Yeah, just inspect. Don't use the alcohol just on principle because it'll hurt the plant.
Okay.
Just try and keep the alcohol on the insect.
Okay, now do I remove that cotton?
You're just using it to dab. Oh, you mean the mealybug itself?
Well, you see, it's covered its little body in that waxy coating,
which is what the alcohol breaks down.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can if you can get that waxy coating off and then put the alcohol onto the bug, it'll die faster.
No. What I'm asking about is the white cotton thing that it produced.
Yeah. That's
That is the bug?
No,
the bug is underneath it. It excretes that wax, which looks like cotton. That will sort of disappear with the alcohol. That's what the alcohol does. It dissolves that that covering. I must say, I was considerably less careful a little while ago. I had an aloe that had mealybug, and so it was right down in the crown, and I knew I couldn't get it all. And I actually took a sprayer. I sprayed it.
Yeah.
I sprayed the whole plant.
With pure alcohol?
I gave it pure rubbing alcohol,
clear. But I mean, but you didn't.
I gave it half an hour, and then I rinsed it off, and it was fine.
Oh.
I don't know if that's an all-the-time thing or if I was just lucky. But
different plants.
Yeah, true.
But the gardenia isn't that. Like, you should be able to access with a Q-tip. There's no little crown, rosette-type crown, which is the problem with palm. I've had palm trees that have mealybug, and there's just no way you can get down into the center.
Okay.
So, good luck with that. That should work. And what you're doing sounds great. Gardenias are the best plants when they flower.
They're gorgeous. Well, I had one for years, and it flowered, and I missed it. I was so grumpy.
One blue.
That would be my style. It flowers and I missed it. But we keep trying.
Thanks for calling.
Right,
that's pretty cute. All right, we've got Marianne on the line from Toronto. Good morning, Marianne.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning, Charlie and
Sean.
Entourage.
Yes.
I like that.
I'm calling about an amaryllis. I had I try to get one every year.
Mm-hmm.
I had a gorgeous white one, and it had about five blossoms.
Oh, wow.
And when I was moving it, clumsy me, I kind of broke the stems off.
Oh, that's okay. The flower stem?
Yes.
Okay, so have you still got it there now?
Well, no, I stuck the stems in a jar of water.
Perfect.
Good.
And the flowers fell off. Now I've got three buds. They look like little
seed pods.
Green balls that are divided sort of like an orange, you know, the little sections.
Mm-hmm.
Now what do I do with them?
Well, you want to start an amaryllis nursery? Those are seed pods.
Right.
They should germinate fairly easily.
But it'll be years before they bloom.
But that's what gardening's all about. It's about patience.
Patience, yeah. So I was going to say, if that happens, because, you know, for many of us, the amaryllis gets top-heavy with that beautiful big bloom.
Oh, yeah.
And whether you're clumsy or not, it just decides to take a dive down to the floor. So cutting off and turning that flower into a cut flower, it actually lasts longer in water than it does on the plant.
I actually got it together this year and finally staked mine.
Oh, did you?
I did.
No, I just...
Not in the vampire way, actually.
I cut mine. Yes. So, no, cutting them, they will last longer in water than they will on the plant.
Well, that's good to know.
So what do
although
I do
you
with
are making
three bulbs that are still on a stem in the water?
So it's up to you. If you want to wait till they ripen and mature, and that'll be past the point of green and fleshy, they'll start to turn yellow. You will have seeds there that you could sow and proceed to grow little tiny baby amaryllis plants, which will slowly but surely become bulbs. It might take 10 or 15 years before you've got a bulb big enough to flower. But at the same time, as Sean points out, gardening is all about patience.
Right. So
Just keep changing the water to keep the stem feeding the seeds. There's a lot of energy in that stem being made because it photosynthesizes. So that's what's going to help make the seeds.
Well,
sure. And that's when you cut off the stem, you may be making your flowers smaller for next year if you're cutting it off and putting it in a vase, because that stem actually adds quite a bit of energy to the plant.
Next year's plant.
Yes, that's correct.
Next year's bulb, yeah.
Well, I'll try and do this, and I'll call you.
Yeah, let us know. Okay, let us know how that goes.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Don't we love amaryllis?
I really do, actually,
It's just like everybody's a horticulturalist when they have an amaryllis, because they're just so no fail.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, particularly the new ones. Though I have to admit, I have figured it out. After years and years of not being able to get my amaryllis to rebloom.
Oh, really?
I've had 2 years now of serious reblooming. Oh. So
generally, I just put mine outside for the summer and then throw them in the basement for a month and good to go.
What I did. It works like a charm. but my point is I have five big, fat, juicy bulbs that I got from Carolyn DeVries.
Ooh.
bulbs are us. Really good quality
big
bulbs.
Fan.
And yeah, oof, blooms to die for. I just had, you know, people's socks being knocked off when
they it's winter. You need a little kaboom.
Absolutely. And that's a lot of kaboom off of an amaryllis. All right. Let us speak with Rita, who's giving us a call from Richmond Hill. Good morning, Rita.
Good morning. Charlie, you were talking about just a little while ago about the birds, right? And the little chickadees. I had so many birds here, so many. I feed them.
Good.
But I need a little bit of help because we have a nasty one. Now there's two. They're huge hawks, and they have torn a squirrel, mourning doves, you name the birds. There's always feathers out there. Like, it makes me sick. Do I feed them or do I not feed them?
Oh, the little birds.
I would. My a relative of mine stopped feeding the birds because she had a hawk coming and taking the birds, and she stopped. And my attitude was, "It's a bird feeder. You got a big one." It's she didn't think that was as interesting as I did. But to me, it's all nature's great tapestry. And sometimes they get taken, and sometimes they don't. When a cat takes them, I get grumpy. But if it's nature's food chain, then I'm okay with that. The things that you could do to reduce that would be sort of putting strings in the air from tree to tree to slow them down. And that will work, but I wouldn't recommend it. I would keep feeding them, and I would enjoy the little birds when they're there, and I would be awestruck by the big birds when they visit.
Well, and you know what else? I feed birds. I'm in Richmond Hill as well. And I've had hawks come in, and they try to land on my feeder, but the feeder doesn't seem big enough to them to land on or stable enough. So they kind of hover over top going, what do I do? What do I do? And then they jump over into a big tree or fly to the nearest big tree. All the little birds have tons of time to get away. So I wonder if thinking about spots that the hawks are, if they can just dive bomb down and grab little birds, then that's, if there's any way, and that's where the strings would come in, or making it a little more difficult for them to come in and surprise the feeding birds.
What they'll generally try and do is sit off to the side on a post. And there is another way to come at this, just for discussion's sake. If you have a problem with bunnies and squirrels, if you put up a post with a cross member at the top, like a big 4x4 that's 10 feet tall with a 2x4 across the top, then you're actually giving an opportunity for these super cool birds to come and visit your garden and reduce your biodiversity in the terms of the bunnies and the squirrels, the pests and the mice and the voles too. So there is an upside to having them visit as well.
Yeah.
And they're just spectacular creatures. Goodness.
Yeah. So yeah, no real clear answer there, Reed. I think you'll just have to decide what works best for you. But I'm kind of with Sean. I'd try and keep feeding them. Thank you. Thanks for that call. Let's just do the numbers quickly. 416-360-0740 or toll free 1-866, I should have let you do this, 740-4740. And we have Lorraine calling us from Cambridge. Good morning.
Hi. Just on an aside, what you're just talking about, I have I finally found something that keeps squirrels off of the feeders, and it's kind of a cone-shaped, bell-shaped, narrow at the top and wide at the bottom, and the little birds can get up in there, and the squirrels and maybe the hawks can't get in there, too. Oh, anyway, what I called about was I have a bougainvillea, and a hibiscus. That it's starting to, I'm wanting to get prepared to put out in the garden, which I did last year. I've had them since last year. And bougainvillea has only, there's two branches on it, and one of the branches hasn't got leaves, but the other one does. And I was wondering if I should trim them back or what I should be doing now. And with the hibiscus as well. It's little, it's got leaves, and it's got, I thought they were buds, but I'm just reading, and it said on the little card, it says to remove the pods, and I thought they were buds, and to promote blooming. So I just wonder what the difference is between a pod and a bud.
Okay, so, but you know, your timing is really good, because haven't we all noticed days are getting longer. Our houseplants are responding. They're starting to grow. They're getting all excited. So with the bougainvillea and the hibiscus, yes, sharp pruners. Get them out. Take any dead wood off. So in the case of the bougainvillea, take away the dead branch. Cut back the live branch by half or less, depending on the size of it. That's going to force out some new growth. Hibiscus, definitely time to take them right back because they are very vigorous plants and they're going to be 10 times the size next September that they are today.
Just like with roses, I would prune back to an outfacing bud and within about a quarter of an inch of the bud. Not too far away, not too close. About a quarter of an inch.
And
the
you could start fertilizing. So
Your
flowering plant fertilizer, whatever that might be, excuse me, mixed with in a watering can once a month. You could start today if you want, if it's watering day for your plants. But we are at that point where the plants will use the fertilizer because they are very happy about these extended days.
So are we.
And so exactly. So are we. We're all smiling so that, you know, the plants will really, you know, take advantage and use that nutrient if you provide it. All right.
Okay. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for your call. My. Look, we're going to get into birds here. We've got another bird question coming. All right. Well, let's see. We've got Art on the line from North York. Good morning, Art.
My question is about raspberry canes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on raspberry canes, the root system is pretty shallow. And I was wondering, I saved a lot of leaves for composting, and I was going to put, and when we get rid of some of the snow and that, put some leaves around or water them, and then put some leaves around and put some peat moss over top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Would that help?
I'd skip the peat moss, and I'd be careful with the leaves. Raspberries, apparently even the canes, are delicious, and the leaves are high in all sorts of vitamins if you can make tea out of them. But by putting the leaves around them, you're going to encourage voles and mice, and I would probably, and they don't need any help. Good heavens, raspberries. I would save that organic matter for somewhere else in the garden because it's brilliant, just not so much for the raspberries. The trick with them is to cut down the old canes every year.
Right. Or cut them down about within 6 inches of the ground.
Cut them right to the ground, the old ones. Because you want new growth coming from the base.
Yeah.
Or if you have a huge patch, then cut down half of the whole thing every year. So you're cutting down half this year and half next year.
Right.
That way you're not doing the fiddly little in-between canes pruning.
Yeah. So you're saying just put fertilizer around.
In the spring, if you need to. What's the quality of your soil like? Is it that poor, or you're just worried that...
It's pretty good in some spots, and it's kind of clay soil in other spots.
Mm. Raspberries are pretty bulletproof. I've never had a problem.
True.
In fact, with me, it's the other way around.
I know. They take over. They're highly vigorous in almost any soil.
I like to get about 50 or 60 quarts.
Oh, my.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm coming to your house.
Yeah, but if I don't look after them and do the right job... You know, because last year, some of them didn't have any berries at all on them.
Well, drip irrigation might be a bigger friend to you, because then you're going to get plumper berries.
Mm-hmm.
Is plumper a word?
Yeah.
And and the canes themselves will be happier and healthier. Also really good for bees, by the way.
What was that you put around?
Drip irrigation.
Drip irrigation, yeah.
So that's a soaker hose, basically.
Yeah, and Lee Valley has little miniature ones that you can
True.
Hook to a main line, and it's nice and easy, and just run it back
Right, so Lee Valley can sell you an actual little irrigation system that
Kit,
you can
yeah.
design it in there to run off your tap on your house, or Canadian Tire will sell you a soaker hose that you put it, take it out on a sunny day, soften up the black that's very stiff, and then do that sort of...
Weaving them in and out.
Yeah, weaving in amongst the canes and sinks.
You can use old coat hangers to pin them down.
True,
too.
Yeah, and I just leave my soaker hoses out year-round. Like,
yeah,
I don't
too.
Take them in.
Yeah.
And I just drag...
Just fix where I've cut them.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That
and
would really help.
It's a nice way to get that water where you want it at the root, because as you point out, they're shallow-rooted, and you really don't want the leaves getting wet just because of the fruit, because there's a tendency towards fungal diseases.
I think that would be the biggest thing you could do for them is the drip irrigation.
Yeah. I mean, last year was wet.
I noticed there's a lot of smaller ones starting up, little plants, so if they...
Those are what you want.
Yeah.
Because leaving them to grow gives you your fruit for this year, and then you cut the old stuff down so you get the new stuff. You got to have new stuff every year.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what blooms.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for your call.
Okay.
My. We got some interesting calls today, Sean. I'm glad you're here.
I'm always glad to be here.
I'm glad you're glad to be here. So So we are going to have to take a quick break, but just before we go, I just want to let everybody know, next weekend, if you missed the Orchid Show in Toronto, the 38th annual Orchid Show and sale returns to the Royal Botanical Gardens, February 23rd and 24th, all day, both days.
And we went to the one in Toronto last year, and I think I might go to the one in Hamilton, because, I mean, it blew my socks off. It was incredible.
It was great. All right, we'll be right back.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Small creatures, big and small, become a problem? Never. Never, never. All right, so we do, I'm here with Sean James, by the way, and we're getting some great calls. We do have some open lines. If you would like to call, Sean, would you like to give the numbers?
I would love to. 416-360-0740 if you're local. And if you're not, then it's 866-740-4740.
All right, and there's not much time left in the show, so if you're going to call, call early. What's that?
It goes so fast.
I know. That hour is like, whoa.
Goodness gracious.
What a blink of the eye. We've got Brad on the line in Hamilton. Good morning, Brad.
Hello. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
Wonderful. I've got actually a dual-part question about your bird feeders.
Uh-huh.
One, how do you get to attract some of the more desirable birds? And the biggest problem I have is I've got grackles that keep coming and scaring away all the birds I want to see.
Right.
The grackles are only a summer problem. They usually head south in the wintertime.
There's robins here now.
Yeah, they stay.
They didn't leave.
You know their Latin name is Turdus migratorius?
No,
how bad is that? No wonder they're grumpy. a diversity of seed is good to get a bunch of different birds. You're in Hamilton, so you're close to the Hamilton Naturalist Club, and they're a great group if you want to learn more about birds and about nature in general. And they do have a special birding group. They're phenomenal. But having a variety of feeders as well. Mm-hmm. I have, back to Lee Valley again, a squirrel buster.
Oh, yeah.
And
they're cute.
It's great.
When videos.
When too many birds sit on them, it closes a little hole, so the squirrels can't get at it.
No.
So it really is squirrel-proof,
but
it also keeps the grackles out of it because one grackle's enough to close the hole.
Do you set the weight on it?
No,
it already comes that way.
Four sparrows and it closes.
Okay.
Four of my annoying English
there you
plump.
Go. Yeah, I have one of those as well that you could actually set the spring weight.
I must have got the cheap one.
Well, for different size birds. It's not called Squirrel Buster. I forget what it's called.
Oh, mine is, that's the brand name is Squirrel Buster.
Yeah, so if a blue jay comes to mine, it closes because the blue jay's too heavy.
Too heavy,
Can't get the food.
The whole Mark's Choice line of tools. Last year, at any rate, they had an upside-down suet feeder because apparently only the woodpeckers come in from the bottom and feed on it, which I thought was pretty funky, and it seems to work.
And that would be available at Home Hardware.
Or Canada Blooms.
I imagine he's got stuff at Canada Blooms for sale.
I don't know. Oh, probably, yes.
Yeah, probably. Sponsoring.
That's true. Yes, you're right about Home Hardware, and I love dealing there anyway. They're such nice people.
Yeah, so. Typically they are. All right. Well, I hope that answers your question, Brad. That was a
thank
good
one. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Look, we got another bird question. We're
starting. What have we done?
The garden show just became the bird show. Good morning, Margaret, calling in from Toronto.
Hi. Am I on now, Margaret?
Yes, you are.
Oh, good morning, Charlie and Mr. Birdman. I hope you can help me. I can't find my larger bird book, but I found my small one. I've never seen this bird. It's sort of that, you know, dull brown color, but on the tips of its wings, and I forgot to Google to see in Birds of Ontario, white. It's pretty. It's a little smaller than a robin. At first I thought it might be a female robin, but it's like nice and fat. That's about all I could say. It's got a nice chest, a round chest.
You said it was a little smaller than a robin, sorry?
It's a little smaller than a robin, but fatter than a robin, as if, you know, if a robin was pregnant and it carried the little birds in its breast.
And you know what female cardinals look like, of course. It's not a female cardinal.
No, I had a female cardinal.
Okay.
And they have the longer tail. This one doesn't.
There's a wonderful app that you can get from the Cornell people called Merlin Bird ID.
And Merlin, like Merlin the magician?
Yeah, bird ID, and you enter a bunch of different
criteria,
mm-hmm. sure, like what color, what size, and then it'll take a stab at telling you what the options are. There's another one, I think it's iNaturalist, where you can take a picture of the bird and send it and it into the ether. And then
I can't do that. I don't have one of those cameras, and I'm a loss at sending it by email and everything.
Okay. And then I would check into Merlin.
Now, I could say, too, a question that's stumped me this year. I get mostly sparrows. I wouldn't know the difference between an English or a Russian or a Canadian sparrow, to tell you the truth. I get a lot of sparrows. I haven't had as many chickadees. And here they come again.
Those are the English sparrows, probably.
A few days ago, before the storm, way before we had bad weather, for 3 days.
Yeah, they know.
They never came to the feeder.
Oh, really? That's unusual.
For 3 days. Then they came back, and they seem to cluster like crazy at this feeder. And then they disappear for hours. Like I thought, lunch break, coffee break.
They're making the route through the neighborhood. They're going from one feeder to another generally.
I think I'm about the only one, and we have a tiny street. So that's really confusing.
They may be going far and wide. Like I have a friend in Vancouver, and he has what he calls the bush tit gang. And it's this adorable, tiny little brown bird. You wouldn't think they'd be so adorable. And they do like three times a day they'll visit.
Each feeder.
His apple. No, his apple tree, because he eats bugs and seeds, but mostly bugs. And they'll go from neighborhood to neighborhood. Yeah. And so it obviously takes them quite a while to make the circuit.
Get around. But if it's really bad weather, sometimes the birds are hunkering down and they stay together to stay warm.
Charlie, a few days ago, the wind was blowing and snowing and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
They were all around the feeder.
Oh,
and now I see they're waiting for me to put water out. Like, I've got enough evergreen or whatever, and I heat the water in the kettle keep breaking it. But the phenomenon of them, just storming back and then not, I've never seen that happen before.
That's in my garden. That's pretty normal because they'll eat for a while and then they'll go rest and warm up for a bit. You're doing a lot of the right things though. The water is actually surprisingly important and something
I know
folks forget about. And having 30% cover, 30% actually, this goes back to the lady who had the hawk question.
Yes.
Yeah. If you have 30% places where the birds can quickly go and hide,
cedar hedges, things like that.
Yeah, and then you can see.
Oh yeah, and instead of when the weather was really really cold, instead of being in the branches of the evergreen or my euonymus or whatever, they were on the ground. It really surprised me.
Hmm. Yeah, some of them are ground feeders. You say that bird that you were trying to get an ID on, did you say it was alone?
Yes, I don't think there's a pair.
Okay.
Because the one that comes, it seems to be one and doesn't come all the time, but it does. It doesn't really go to the feeder, so I throw out grapes and cookies or raisin bread. Hmm. Is raisin bread okay for them?
Sure, it's full energy.
Yeah, yeah. So, and it seems happy, but it does come for the water.
Yeah, the water's super important.
That's great.
Yeah, I know that.
Raisins on their own would be better than raisin bread, actually.
Yeah.
What's that on the raisins?
Raisins on their own would be, but you should eat the raisin bread and leave the and give the birds actual raisins.
Well, what kind of raisins? Sultana or dried, or I'll buy them.
Just dried raisins would probably be really good for them. There's certain birds that are fruit eaters, like robins.
Sprinkle them out there.
Hey, well, I'll throw it out. Thank you for your help, and the birdies say thanks. I can't wait.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay,
bye-bye. All right, so this is now newly christened Garden and Bird Show with Charlie Dobbin.
They do go together.
And Sean James, they do, just like cats and dogs, really. A lot of gardeners have pets out in the garden, so we get into all the circle of life, right?
That's true.
All right, we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right, we don't have many minutes left, so let's go to our caller from Eden, New York. Good morning, Emmy.
Good morning. I'll talk fast. A couple of weeks ago, I cut back my forsythia that was hanging over the road, and there's some burning bush out there, too, that needs trimming. Mm-hmm. I put it in my kitchen. It is now gorgeous.
Oh, gorgeous.
Lovely. Full
bloom. And that got me to thinking, can I root forsythia and burning bush? I would like to maybe put burning bush, forsythia, alternate them down a section of property line. thus attracting more birds.
Yes, exactly.
I would like to see maybe a different option than burning bush, because it can actually move into the wild in a bad way, and it's not native. But the forsythia, you can definitely do cuttings of, and quite easily.
Yeah.
If you like that combination, you can have a little extra bang as well. There's a plant called Brilliant Chokeberry. Terrible common name, but a beautiful plant that has spring flowers for the bees, beautiful red berries all winter long, and spectacular winter color, fall color.
Fall color. Red leaves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that
Brilliant Chokeberry. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful plant.
Brilliant. Yeah, very nice plant. Shiny. I would do that for Forsythia. Totally. You can totally, I mean, and you're enjoying those big long branches of flowers right now. Little shorter tip cuttings. Mm-hmm. I would cut off some tips there and get some roots growing from the nodes. Maybe 4 to 5 inch length cuttings.
Yep.
And you should
stick a willow branch in it. It'll help it root.
True. That's true.
Because it releases
hormones.
Rooting hormones.
So, yep. If you have
willow. By leaving them in water, they will root and
they may.
And pot them and.
Yep. The very long branches may not root versus a shorter one, but, you know, it's worth a try.
Depends on how often you change the water. That's a lot of it.
Good point. Good point. Yeah, you want clean water.
I just changed it. All right.
Let us know how that works out. Thanks for calling, Emmy.
Thank you.
That's
bye-bye.
Great. Bye-bye. All right. As I mentioned, the show's almost over. So just a couple of important things. Next weekend, Toronto Botanical Gardens, Jump on Spring and Seedy Saturday, February the 23rd, 10 to 3 p.m., free admission. They love a donation for the food bank, but very cool, smart people, obviously seed exchanges.
I think the master gardeners are there answering questions, too.
Likely. So there's lots of expertise available for anybody who just wants to get jazzed up about spring. And here on The Garden Show next Saturday, speaking about jazzing up for spring, we've got Stephen Biggs and his daughter Emma coming in. Emma has just published a book called Gardening with Emma, Grow and Have Fun. She's 12 years old, and with her dad's help, she's put together a beautiful book, great graphics, lovely photography. So we're going to hear more about that next Saturday from them, and Frank will be back.
Yes.
Hallelujah. Or maybe not. Not sure. Jury's out on that one. But Sean, it's been a lot of fun. I'm so happy you came.
It's always fun. I really have a good time, and it's always fascinating to see what people are interested in.
True. Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, of course, you're all over the map with your speaking engagements and your teaching and no breaks at all.
And the consulting design thing has really taken off. I'm using my brain more than my back nowadays, and
good.
I'm really enjoying it.
We're at that age.
Yes, we are.
it has kind of crept up on us, hasn't it? So you mentioned you're off to do a consultation later today.
I am, yeah, even in winter. This is when designers have the time to give you the art that you deserve.
Okay, so this is where you're just coming in for a first look around and listen to the homeowner's thoughts.
Get the creative juices flowing, because it is an artistic process. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I sit down and sort of cookie cutter out designs. No. You know, I think about the soil and the exposure and
but you can't
what
see the
want.
Soil.
But I know where they are, and therefore I know what the soil is.
Because I remember I went one time in this kind of weather to somebody's yard, and we stood there, and they go, well, there's some rocks there, and there's some hostas in there. And they started, I was like, I'll come back when the snow melts.
In the winter now, though, there's often times that the snow does melt. So I can get out there and look at things. If I'm going through a neighborhood, I can zip out and take a look.
True. Well, in some ways, it's big picture stuff anyway. It's the structure, frame, skeleton of the garden, which
is
great.
And if you know you're going to do that, take some pictures throughout the season. Don't rush a landscaping process. Take some pictures throughout the season so that when you do talk to a designer, then you're ready to show them, and this is what it looks like, and here's my soil. Like you can have
different
do
times.
A little research and have answers ready.
Good stuff. That's good advice.
Thank you.
And Sean can be reached at?
The easiest way to find me is my website, which is Sean James, S-E-A-N, james-consulting.ca.
There you go. Good promotion for Sean James.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming, and I'll be taking you for breakfast on top of it all.
Always look forward to it.
Thanks, Sebastian. Couldn't do it without you or any of our great callers. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio. The new AM 740.